Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Gift of Gaming podcast, and it's Newsweek this week from Kingdom Hearts News, the Game Freak leak, and of course the Monster Hunter Wilds beta is out. All this coming up with the news team.
News team assemble!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's me, your host, Darren Wade, and today I'm joined by the console-hating, PC-playing, lore-seeking, full-time Canadian himself, Chris Robbins. Chris, say hello.
What's going on?
That's not hello. And of course, the artist formerly known as Mr. Xbox Games Pass himself, Luke Maycock. Luke.
What up, Darren? I'm back.
You're back. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's been a hot minute. It's been like 2 months.
You've missed two news episodes. Me and Chris have been holding the fort, yeah.
I appreciate that, you guys.
It's been fantastic.
Fuck you. Fuck you, I'm back. I'm going to put my stamp down.
How is it to have time back in your life, Luke?
Really good, really pleasant. Feeling a lot more balanced. Still have to do lots of little bits in the job hunting realm, but there's a big dry spell in the animation industry at the moment, so at the moment I am fun employed, so... No, it's been good. I've been playing games and resting and watching TV and all those kind of things I wanted to do and didn't have time for.
Nice. So, and what game was on your first on your list to turn on now once you had your free time?
I've such a long list of games to get through, but the very first one that was on there was a game called Before Your Eyes. I don't know if either of you guys would have heard.
Never heard
no.
of it.
It's an indie game. It was on the list because because it's got great reviews from like certain people whose opinions I hold in high esteem. And it's quite a short game as well. It's about an hour and a half to 2 hours long.
Oh, great. Okay.
But the basic mechanic of it is, the story premise is you are a soul after having passed away and you get scooped out of the sea of souls by this dog guy. And he is going to present your story to this god. And he has a good hunch about your story, that it's a powerful, strong story. And he gets you to go back and tell the story of your life from your earliest memories, starting back in your early childhood. But the trick, the mechanic of the game that's really enticing is it's a PC game. So you use the mouse to look around first person style. And you have a little reticle in the center. But to interact with things, you blink. So the game has your webcam turned on and is always watching your eyes. And whenever you blink, that's how you interact with things.
Oh, you told me about this before.
Oh,
yeah.
Did I? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So this has been like way up the list. And so every scene that plays out, it will get to a certain point where a little metronome will come along at the bottom of the screen and start ticking. And if you blink while that's happening, it skips time forward in your life. So whatever story that was happening just then, you're going to miss.
So you have to do like almost like a staring competition against your webcam when you have a...
Kind of, yeah. It's really interesting. The mechanic is really interesting because at first, like, I thought I was going to really like this game. And then when I started to play it and that started being the case of like this being like a resistance kind of struggle thing, it felt like a gimmick. Like it felt like, I was like, this is fucking stupid. I don't want to have to strain my eyes for like 2 hours. This is a really unpleasant experience. But then when I just got going into the flow of the game, they start to use the mechanic and turn it to more interesting means, mm-hmm. which I won't spoil what that means. But yeah, just great, great game. I was bawling my eyes out crying by the end of it. It was so good. It was such a well-told story.
And what's it called again?
It's called Before Your Eyes.
Before Your Eyes. I like that. Mm. Maybe give that one a look at.
Highly recommend. So that was the first one. Knocked that out of the park and I'm on to the rest of the pastures.
Nice. Yep. Nice. Hey, what's anything else on that list?
The first next one up is going to be Disco Elysium.
Oh
shit. Okay, yeah.
Great
never played it before, but I have it on...
I've heard great things.
Yeah, I have it on Steam Deck and my Switch. So it's been on the list for a hot minute. But I really want to spend the time to get into the world because there's... a lot of world to get into.
There's a lot of reading, like in terms of there's a lot of. I never finished it, but and I think you're coming into a good time to play it. I played it at winter, like coming into winter time, and it felt like a good, like it felt like the appropriate atmosphere to be playing it in as well. Like you know,
that's kind of the general. So I'll rattle off really quickly. The top three are Disco Elysium, Pacific Drive, and Control.
Control I installed. I still haven't fucking...
I got the Ultimate Edition on Steam for like €3 during
Steam. Me too. Yeah. Well, I've had it for years, actually. But yeah. I still haven't played it.
I have Control on my list as well, because I've heard nothing but like impressive things about it. And like, I should definitely give that a bash.
I bought it when I was obsessed with SCP Foundation stuff, and that's apparently exactly it's very, it's not officially SCP, but it definitely draws inspiration.
What's SCP?
Heavy inspiration.
SCP is like this online, I want to say creepypasta. It's kind of like a creepypasta, but it's a bunch of user submitted stories from this foundation that kind of like contains or at least like monitors supernatural objects and monsters. Like
Slenderman would be in the same kind of...
Yeah, Slenderman would be sort of like an SCP, or like God would be an SCP.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Like I think it stands like for Security Containment Protocol. The S might be something like different, but it's like a genre of that. But
it's all like open license. That's why you see a lot of games, is because if you just want to kind of make a game, but you don't want to come write any sort of backstory, you could just slot in some SCP stuff very easily because it's all free.
Yeah, Control is super heavily inspired by that. I've seen enough little snips from later on in the game where I'm like, ooh, can't get this spoiled for myself. This looks great. Looking forward to
it. I think I put together a to-do list there a little while back, and I think it's maybe fourth or fifth day on my list of games.
Have you played it yet?
No.
We could do a game review of it.
We could do a games club.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'd be down.
That's all right. Control it is. Excellent.
Sweet. Okay, cool.
Great. That was nice. I'm like, look at that. Easily sorted. Chris, what have you been playing? Control. I finished this.
I've been doing a few things. On my solo time, I have fully immersed myself back into Night City. I have just binging it so much. Actually beat it this time around. Which
nice.
Nice, yeah. And I also got...
DLC? Did you get it too?
I bought the DLC while I was playing this, and I was going to go give that a shot too, but like... Right now, my main character that I've been playing through is just way too fucking busted. Like, there's just nothing stands in his way. He's crazy. So I didn't want to kind of ruin the DLC by just going like
being
easy
super OP
mode with
my sandy
katana and just like everything in the room dies.
Yeah. What's your build? What's your
reflex, cool, and technical?
Okay.
So just revolvers and sand. Devastan Katana. And yeah. Just like, well, actually, 80% of the game I played with throwing knives. Because apparently throwing weapons is a thing now. Didn't used to be.
This is just...
They're so broken. So fun.
Our viewers not super in the know, this is Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yeah,
didn't even say the name. We all got it. We're all going with it. But this is a Cyberpunk 2077 deep dive here.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've been playing tons of that. I just beat one. I did one of the endings. I did pick up the DLC, but I've decided not to play with this current character. The good thing about the DLC is you could start a new game and start right at the Phantom Liberty content. So you skip like all of Act 1 and all that stuff.
Nice.
They do make some decisions just for you. It's fine. I've fucking done it already. All I want to do is get into the DLC with like...
A challenge.
Yeah. And a new build. I'll probably go hacking or something again.
Nice.
So yeah, that's been my solo time. And when the stars align and my other two buddies... are available to play, we have been playing a lot of Windblown.
Oh, wait. From the makers of... what's that game? Kev is obsessed with it.
Dead Cells.
Yes.
It is out in early access. It is fantastic.
Yes, because I looked at this when the trailer was released.
Because I think
looks,
I posted up in the chat.
And I was like, this looks like it could be great fun. Damn.
What kind of game is it?
It's kind of isometric roguelike.
Oh, cool.
So kind of like your Hades combat.
Yeah.
But like 3-player max. I don't know. Very fast. A lot of different builds, as roguelikes tend to be.
The art style is amazing.
The art style is fantastic. My only gripe, actually, and this is a weird one, is the soundtrack. Which, like, the soundtrack is great. And it's music I would actually listen to while I like code at work, but it just doesn't mesh well with the game, in my opinion.
Ooh,
it just seems a bit off.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be my only gripe so far.
That's nice. Interesting. Very, very cool. Darren, what about what kind of stuff have you been playing?
I have been in, and I love it. I have had such a good year of games in terms of like the ones that I picked up and really wanted to play and hope they had a lot of promise have all... done that. So sweet. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth was amazing. Then I got on to Astrobot, a possible game of the year contender for me. That was so much fun. I platinum that. And then Space Marines 2, with Niall. I played through that. We said like one or two operations doing that. That was great fun. And now I've been absolutely knee deep in Dave the Diver, and I cannot put it down.
Yeah, I bought that too. Actually,
I can't put Dave the Diver down. That's and I so know funny. Colm and Craig were playing it, so I might ask them if they want to do a games review on that one. I don't know how far they've gotten into it. The loop on that is so fucking good.
Is it good?
That's so good. It's like you're just like you're this dude, Dave the Diver, who goes diving. You're diving for fish and for like little, you know, treasures and stuff in the water, and it's all cool. And then the evening time, you got to come up and you do have a little kind of like cooking sim. You run a sushi bar.
That's right.
And like you can edit, you can change the interior, how it looks, and it's very like, and it's just one of the most charming games I've played, I think, ever. Like there's loads of cutscenes for certain characters, and it's all pixel art. The cutscenes are fucking amazing. Like, they're so well done. But yeah, the loop is just so like, I mean, even today I was like, I need to get down 15 minutes beforehand and set up here with the guys. Yeah. And I was like, oh, but I just one more fucking day of diving. I gotta go down again. Like, yeah, you know, awesome. It's really hard to put down, you know, and it's, again, it's so charming. There was a bit that I came to where you've got like VIPs that come to the sushi bar. And one of them was just this singer, like, again, made up singer in this world, whatever. And she's like, oh, if you can make me this dish, you know, I could maybe play at the weekend for you guys, whatever. And they're like, sweet. So found all the ingredients of the dish, made her the dish. She loved it. There was this cool cutscene of her kind of like remembering part of her childhood and then being able to write new songs because of the inspiration from this dish. All in cool pixel art cutscene, you know. And then she's like, hey, I'll give you guys like a little, you know, cool private performance, because it's just this, you, there's Bancho who runs the sushi restaurant, there's Cobra who kind of runs operations and stuff for you for the dive and thing. So you have a whole like little mini team. And then it was this really cool thing. We go back to your farm and she plays some songs, and they're proper recorded songs. I mean, just made up for this game, but fully recorded songs that are lovely. And it's all them around the campfire listening to her. And I was sitting there being like, God, I fucking love this game right now. I'm so bit into it. Like, you know,
this is curious because you usually prefer or lean towards the grand spectacle, the Final Fantasy Rebirths,
yes,
the Space Marines, the Horizons. How do you, and it's very rare I get to talk to you about these little charming indie, well, I shouldn't say indie, but like these kind of games that I'm usually most obsessed with. How do you think it stacks up to those grand spectacles that you...
Oh, it's on, in terms of from an enjoyment perspective, in terms of how much fun I'm playing the game, it's up there with them. Do you know what I mean? Like, when I talk about game of the year for me, I think if I had to pick a top three, in no particular order, I'm going to say in the question for me this year, because I mean, I know Dave the Diver came out last year for PC, but this year was released on console. I'd say for me, I'd have to have Astrobot, Dave the Diver, and Final Fantasy Rebirth all in the conversation.
Yeah.
Rebirth's going to win that for me. Do you know what I mean? I know that in terms of what that game meant to me on a personal level, but Dave the Diver is right up there with any of the best games that I've played there. It's just so, and it's like, the reason Rebirth is so good, it's a grand big spectacle, I know what you mean, but the gameplay in it is outrageously fun. Like, the battle system in Rebirth is one of the greatest battle systems in a game ever. The game's a lot of fun, and I sat there and I laughed at it. I was like, whoa'd with it with certain the big things. And I'm sitting there, and Dave the Diver has some of the same kind of things. So I'm sitting there going, oh God, this game's, you know, I'm sitting there really enjoying certain moments. So
yeah,
I think it's up there with them, Chris, for sure. And I think I should probably get into playing more of them, but it's just, I think Dave the Diver is exceptional in terms of its loop. I was always into, like, you know, cooking kind of little sims, and the diving thing is just so relaxing, and it's the perfect game for the PlayStation Portal. The perfect game to sit there handheld.
I got it prepped for
Steam Deck.
I have it
on Steam Deck as well. Yeah.
Oh, it's the perfect way to play it. Like, you know, in bed, chilling out, go for one last late night dive. You know, it's great. We've talked for video games for 12 minutes. You've got a whole round to finish.
It's
what you want. So we'll crack into the news, guys, right? And the first article I have for you is from a Game Freak, the guys who come up with Pokemon and had a major leak in October. So this is coming from Games Radar Plus from Can Seren. Huge Game Freak leak reveals Pokemon source code, unused designs, Switch 2 details, and unannounced Gen 10 games. An unprecedented leak has hit mainline Pokemon series developer Game Freak, revealing tons of previously unknown information about unused monsters, unannounced projects, and a potential Switch 2 codename. Game Freak acknowledged the situation in a statement posted to its website earlier this week, where the studio apologized to employees about potentially sensitive data being leaked by an unnamed third party, while confirming that it secured its servers and it's currently working to improve its back-end security. Details from the leak, which is said to include gigabytes of information, are still spilling onto social media, however. Most notably, the entire source code for Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver are purportedly online, opening the floodgates for never-before-seen mods, alongside dozens of concept art showing early designs for beloved creatures and scrapped Pokemon that never made it across the finish line. The leaks aren't quite as exposing as the ones that hit Insomniac Games last year. The most information we have on the upcoming Pokemon Legends Zed or A, is that it's currently being tested, for example. That there are supposedly mentions of Pokemon's 10th generation, codenamed Gaia, which is being tested for something called Ounce, thought to be the codename for the Nintendo Switch 2.
What a bad codename.
Awful codename.
It's like, how much better is it? Just an ounce.
just an ounce. Or it weighs an ounce. You know, this
it's
awful.
Just a codename.
One of the more interesting tidbits in the leaks is that there is an unannounced game in development at Game Freak and ILCA, the studio that remade Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, which could be a multiplayer project of some sort. And finally, treatments of and concept arts for various live-action and anime films are out there, including one for a Detective Pokemon sequel, though some of those projects were slated to have come out already, so they may have been either shelved or scrapped entirely. So that's the kind of nuts and bolts, the serious bit
this,
of the...
This guy chose his battles very carefully because that leak was way worse than that.
Yeah. In terms of... We got a darker side to Game Freak, I suppose. Did we, is that what you'd call that, Luke? Next article?
Yeah. Like, for the next article. Everyone's been crying out for a more mature Pokemon series.
Yeah.
But not too quite...
Pump the brakes.
Not quite in the way. I think they misread the assignment.
You and I'll get into the article now, but you sent in a link saying, oh my God, this is what's happened with the Pokemon link. Like, there's lore out there, like, you know, mature lore or whatever. And I think the gif I sent you was your one from the Matrix going, you know, I said, oh, I wanted a mature Pokemon game, but not like this.
not like this.
So this next article is coming from Forbes by Paul Tassi.
Forbes.
Mm. Yeah, the Forbes reported on this shit, man. It's great. Pokemon's Typhlosion goes viral after Game Freak leak for the weirdest possible reason. So this is the article. I don't even know where to start here. Game Freak has been hacked and countless files have been released, which unfortunately includes some personal information about its employees. But it also includes everything from unused concept art and scrap lore stories from the universe, and one in particular has gone a bit viral. More than a bit. That would be a tale about Typhlosion, the gold silver starter evolution, which I definitely picked growing up. I also picked Charizard before that. I like fire, what can I say? But now my memories might be tainted a bit. Fans have discovered some sort of lost lore story about Typhlosion, which, well, here's a brief excerpt. Quote, a long time ago when the boundary between Pokemon and humans was unclear, end quote. Oh. Okay, nope, I'm going to stop right there. Yes, this is where this is going where you think it's going. A relationship between a human and Pokemon. That kind of relationship. But it's even weirder than you might think. A young girl is tricked by a shape-shifting Bakufun, or Typhlosion, into thinking that he's a human. Eventually, she apparently has a child with him, and she's called his wife. Her father eventually comes and kills the Bakufun, and when she returns to the village, she and her half-Pokemon child are teased by the men in the village, who at one point cover it in fur skins. They then run into the forest and are never seen again. Here's a particularly nightmarish passage for when the father goes to find his daughter. Quote, you have broken the branch. Your father will be here soon. Now I'm going to do something bad to your father. If you kill me, you can have my eyes, my voice, and my heart. Then I want you to build a fire where I was killed and let it burn. And I want you to sing this song until it burns out. The girl said, please stop. You're going to kill my father. Please stop. Let yourself be killed. Goodbye, he said. We'll never meet again. It's so dark.
Yeah.
So dark.
This isn't even the darkest one.
I know we have explicit, but I didn't want to go too outrageously far from the PC stuff from this.
One,
you know?
One we definitely couldn't cover at all.
Yeah. If you guys want, I mean, this just type in Typhlosion. I'm sure you'll.
Yeah, Google exists.
Yeah, Google exists. The article continues. Many forms of mythology, including Japanese mythology, has animals transforming into humans or vice versa in order to exhibit some form of trickery. Zeus did this a lot, for example. Specifically, Typhlosion is supposed to be based off the Mujina, the Japanese badger, where in folklore it is often depicted to be a shape-shifting yokai, a demon or trickster. So this is not entirely pulled out of thin air, but something like this making into Pokemon documents at Game Freak is something. It's unclear where this story was made or why it's in these files. We have no idea who wrote it or if it was anywhere close to making it into a game. There are plenty of really dark Pokemon lore stories, though none quite this crazy. But the text is taken off online all the same, and now no one will ever look at Typhlosion the same way again. I certainly won't.
I mean, I don't think this was ever actually pitched. I imagine this is just like some private Slack conversation between two employees joking around about a fucking dark Pokemon idea.
Possibly. Yeah. I'm kind of, my brain is trying to go down the avenues of like, was this like a joke between them? But it actually sounds like it's so rooted in mythology that someone was like really cooking up something they thought was serious. But yeah, no, for sure. I agree.
It's like Pokemon art. Is it Arceus was the one that was based in the olden times, whatever. Yeah. It's like when Arceus was released, like, you know, all the devs were like, oh, wait a second. There's a whole lot of old mythology we could work with here. A whole lot of sexually charged mythology we could work with.
As most mythology is quite sexually charged.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they weren't. My mind just went to like oftentimes if I'm working on a show and like it's not really, no one's seen it except us at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And so we come up with loads of like shit posty stories about the characters and
how they're thinking.
They're secretly like cannibals or whatever, and or they're monsters, or sometimes like rigs will glitch out and they look like monsters.
I'm just glad there was no imagery for a half Pokemon, half child Typhlosion. You know,
not from Game Freak there wasn't, but people sure cooked online. People ran with that.
Google. Yeah, sorry, Chris, that microphone stand is pretty dodgy, so you're gonna have to lean the microphone up against that stand and hope for the best, I'm afraid.
Okay, all right. Get closer.
If anyone hears like a bang or whatever, it's Mike's falling. Don't mind that. So yes, I mean, awful. Again, the part that we're not addressing here is that people's personal information was given out with this hack as well, which is pretty unfortunate and not what we like to see. But cool that, because I think this leak was what we got, where we got the first code name for the Switch, Ounce. So that's a cool little tidbit there. I mean, not a cool name, but cool that we kind of got a little bit insight.
And
into
it's not going to be the official name.
No, it's
Switch
just
Switch has always had weird code names before they got released. Yeah. Or sorry, Nintendo consoles.
I think it wasn't the GameCube, or maybe it was the GameCube, was going to be
Dolphin.
GameCube was Dolphin. There was that was like one that was Project Magma at one point, but I don't think they actually finished.
Way cooler names than Ounce. So lazy. It's called Ounce.
I think one of the interesting bits from that story that caught my eye was that they were talking about a multiplayer Pokemon experience. My brain was like, oh my god, they finally caught up to Legend of Zelda Four Swords. Like, they can do multiplayer Game Boy Advance games now at last.
Oh my god. And it's, you know, it is just pretty, because I know like the multiplayer Pokemon game exists in that you can get online and battle people, whatever else, but like this idea that you could go
Power World.
Chris, the lawsuit is still outstanding. It's interesting, like a Gen 10 game, so I guess we can probably safely assume that we have a Pokemon game being launched with Switch. Supposedly. Well, actually, maybe not launch, because A or Z, Pokemon Z or A, that new one that they've coming out, I don't know if that's a launch title with Switch 2. I thought that was...
No, I think that'll be this generation. Yeah.
Yeah. So so maybe they won't have a launch Pokemon game. But or maybe that one will just be delayed cross-platform or something.
That's not the next-gen game, though. The next Pokemon Legends one, because I'm pretty sure that's going to continue the Pokemon Legends Arceus. So it's also going to be based in the past with all... those Pokemon, but I think the next, so they did that with Arceus as well. Like Arceus came out, and then not Sword and Shield, whatever one came after them, Scarlet and Violet.
Oh, the really awful one, yeah, the open world one, yeah.
They came out pretty close together, but Scarlet and Violet was the next gen one, and Arceus was just like a side game almost. So I think they'll do the same for this, and there'll be a next proper next gen Pokemon game
with the Switch 2.
And God, it's got to perform when it comes out, because Scarlet and Violet was a disaster in terms of dropped frames and like.
And they have, that's what I mean. It's like it'll still sell bucket loads, but at some point you have to say, you guys have so much money in the bank. You have to make it decent. You know, even if it takes putting Typhlosion mature content in there, you got to make a good Pokemon game. You know,
anything else,
I think,
please.
Yeah, this time around, the pressure is especially going to be on them, because the aforementioned game that is in a lawsuit with Pokemon now.
That is literally printing money at this stage. Yeah, Power World.
It's a really crazy. Pokemon's never been in this situation before, but it's been building for like decades. Like, people complaining about how they're not squeezing the most out of the systems. They're really not pushing the potential of what their games can be. Like, you have Scarlet and Violet comes out, open world style game, dropping frames like crazy, but Breath of the Wild, a launch game on the Nintendo Switch, runs better than it. Like, the pressure is seriously on. They have competitors now. It's like, it's a whole thing. It's actually kind of exciting if you're
As a Pokemon fan, I'd love for them to come out with like a good grown-up Pokemon game. And not to say grown-up, I mean grown-up in terms of like what it looks like. I don't mean it means to have like, you know, it should be a game for kids, but like, come on, we're approaching Switch 2
and
all that kind of stuff.
I'm not sure if they're ever going to do that, though, because I think a lot of the appeal of Pokemon is also selling all the merchandise, which they sell those stuffed animals and shit to
kids big time.
For the most part. Maybe.
Yeah.
But, well, I don't know. Maybe it's just the direction they don't want to go in.
Lazy. Lazy. All right, next one is an article close to my heart. This is coming from Dustin Bailey at GamesRadar+. Tetsuya Nomura acknowledges that Kingdom Hearts 4 is more like Kingdom Hearts 13, but the game's gotten a reset to keep the new players from getting confused. Kingdom Hearts 4 will, notably, not be the fourth entry in the famously convoluted lineage of the series, and director Tetsuya Nomura knows that all the backstory is intimidating for new players. That's why there's been a story reset leading into the new game. Sorry, guys, I was stepping on the light button here. That's why the room light was changing.
Lights were going nuts.
Apologies. Quote, as everyone has said, Kingdom Hearts 4 was just announced, but it's really just Kingdom Hearts 13, Nomura says in an interview with Japanese magazine Young Jump. This has been Google translated. Nomura adds that while players... intimately familiar with Kingdom Hearts lore, will have a deeper appreciation for both Kingdom Hearts 4 and the upcoming mobile game Missing Link. They're both, quote, being made with a stronger focus on being new titles rather than sequels. To that end, Nomura has tried things like bringing in devs who've never worked on Kingdom Hearts before to participate in writing the story. Quote, I do think of Missing Link and 4 as a reset, Nomura says. I wanted to end it with 3, or rather reset it, so I appointed new writers and even made a new logo to make it easier for new people to get into, end quote. This notion of a reset isn't entirely surprising. After all, the devs have been calling Kingdom Hearts 4 the start of a new story arc since it was first announced, but it's not as if the new game will completely ignore everything that came before. For example, Nomura teases that the famous line, quote, I've been having these weird thoughts lately, like is any of this for real or not, has come to fruition in the new game's concept of Quadratum. Quote, for those who know how Kingdom Hearts 3 ends, Nomura says, the reason why Sora ends up like that in the ending is because we wanted to reset the story in a way. This should make it even easier for newcomers to join the story starting from Kingdom Hearts 4. Fans of the Kingdom Hearts series will also be able to feel like it's, oh, so it's this, but we're making this game with the hopes that new players can enjoy it as well. To be honest, this whole, like, I've been having these weird thoughts lately, like, is any of this for real or not, quote, and he's saying, oh, I had that in mind for this concept of Quadratum this whole time. I'm calling bullshit on Nomura right now. Great line.
It's kind of like Mario 2, when you beat the game, you realize it's all just Mario's dream. none of it was real. It was all pointless.
But I am excited. I 100% think the game needs this. I enjoyed Kingdom Hearts 3, and I thought the ending of Kingdom Hearts 3 was great, but a lot of the game was really washy for me. And as a diehard Kingdom Hearts fan, I was like, this isn't a great game. It's a good game. It's not a great game. So I think they do need to have a reset. I think they've done it just in time. I think I know exactly what the reset's going to be. I think he's going to make his version of Final Fantasy Versus 13 inside a Kingdom Hearts game, because he's that nuts. That's essentially what's going to happen here. But yeah, I just wish there was something else I could say, but that trailer came out 2 years ago and there's been nothing but this interview since.
Yeah, I will say a bit to his point about this being an entry point for new players and building on that original idea that was in the original games. I have critiques aplenty about Kingdom Hearts.
No!
It is a messy fucking game series. But I can't think of a game that's executed on that idea of entering into a quite convoluted story that's really open to new players as well. I don't think any game has done that better than Kingdom Hearts 2 did it.
Yeah.
Where you had essentially, so you'd Kingdom Hearts 1, and then there was just Chain of Memories. So Chain of Memories had the super convoluted backstory that, like, you played as Sora. It was a direct sequel to the first one, and it was an in-between game loaded with story. And then you went into the second game, and you were playing as just this other guy. But your character, like...
Roxas was better.
Roxas, yeah.
Get out of town. Roxas was better.
But if you go in, you can absolutely have that experience going in and, like, enjoying playing as Roxas. And, like, diegetically, like, within the story, Roxas has no idea what's going on. And you as a new player will have no idea what's going on. And I don't think any game has done, like, lined those two vibes kind of up better than Kingdom Hearts 2 did. So I think Nomura has... I think Nomura can do that from a story. He can't do... There's a lot of things he gets a bit ambitious about, and I don't think he can pull off. But I think stuff like that, he can do really well. I think that could be an interesting...
I just don't know how Disney has stuck with him for so long.
I also don't... I think they're focusing too much on making a cohesive story. I don't think
I don't think that's been the focus ever.
No, I'm sorry. What they're talking about doing.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Kingdom Hearts needs a cohesive story. It is just a fun excuse to jump into Disney worlds and play a Final Fantasy game. Like, that's the game. Like,
Disney are
fantastic. It's fun. But
Kingdom Hearts 3 had a great it tied off a lot of the weird stuff. But in classic Kingdom Hearts 3, I was like, oh great, it's tying off all these endings for all these characters. This is fantastic. And then the ending piece had a, oh, here's seven more questions, like massive questions I have to ask. Like you were this close to kind of tying it off neatly. But so, I mean, I don't know if some of those things that came in kind of post credits from Kingdom Hearts 3 are going to be directly related to Kingdom Hearts 4, because it seems like it's going to be confusing stuff. I'm in it. You know me, guys. I love Kingdom Hearts. I'll be there no matter what. But I'd love some news about it. I'd love another trailer. Because the trailer that came out 2 years ago was a demo thing released on Unreal Engine 4. But the game is being developed in Unreal Engine 5. So the game's going to look entirely different to what we saw.
Yeah. 2 years ago. That's crazy. That was so long ago.
Yeah. And that's been it. There's not been a peep. Apart from this interview, there's not been a peep about Kingdom Hearts 4. And the only reason he talked about this, I think, was because he was nudged about missing Link. So he wasn't even talked. You know, the nudge wasn't even Kingdom Hearts 4. So... yeah, who knows? But I'm, you know, I'll always talk about Kingdom Hearts, guys. So I'm delighted that got in there. Our next news thing is a update from Masahiro Sakurai. He teases new game that will be announced, quote, sooner or later. This is coming from Jack Coleman at The Gamer. The finale episode of Masahiro Sakurai on Creating Games had a plot twist of sorts, as Sakurai revealed that the episodes had been filmed well in advance of their eventual release, apart from the final episode. The episodes were filmed 2.5 years ago during a rare break for Sakurai after he finished his commitments on Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. In July 2021, Sakurai was asked to write up a game proposal, and he did so at, quote, lightning speed. He went on to say, quote, I'm sorry I can't share more about this project, but assuming we're able to get it made, it should be announced sooner or later. I've been given the okay to move forward with production, but it was going to take some time to assemble the right team. The target time frame was April 2022. Until then, I would have to wait. Sakurai adds, if all went according to plan with production, then Sakurai and Nintendo have been working on this new game for over 2 years now. Sakurai finished up with Ultimate in October 2021, but had to wait until April 2022 to begin production on his next game. During this gap, Sakurai filmed Masahiro Sakurai on Creating Games. As of now, he has no plans to continue releasing content on YouTube, as he's pooled all of his knowledge of game development into the existing episodes. Quote, I'm sure I can think of plenty more to discuss, but at present I've no plans to continue, so please, don't ask for more episodes on this topic or that topic. I've already given this my best, he says. As for Sakurai's new project, we'll just have to wait and see. The legendary creator has been working almost exclusively on Super Smash Bros. For the past decade and a half, and last year he felt that nobody else would be able to, quote, take the reins on this series. My question to you guys is this a Super Smash Bros. Game?
They've convinced him that he's making his own original game, but it's just Smash Brothers again.
He comes up with this wild, intricate, like, fun story, and it's just, okay, well, that enemy's actually Master Hand. And everything you describe is just going to be Smash Bros. Characters.
He can't describe anything without coming back to Smash Brothers.
He created Pit, though, right? Pit's...
did he?
Oh, yeah, I think Pit is one of his... It's kind of how Pit got into Smash Bros. Or Kid Icarus.
You mean Kid Icarus?
Kid Icarus, sorry. Yeah, Pit is the character. Kid Icarus games are Sakurai's, I think. He's the mastermind behind them. So I wonder if it's a new Kid Icarus game, maybe, for Switch. I hope it's... See, this is the question. I hope it's a new Smash Brothers. At the same time, I don't. Me and Craig are currently doing the Smash Brothers series. We've got like 2 episodes left to cover on that. One about like the content in terms of like music and all that kind of stuff. And our last episode is going to be our thoughts on like the future of Smash Brothers. And I haven't really kind of figured out my thoughts for what my future of Smash Brothers should be. Because I'm like, Ultimate was in name and in what it was, the ultimate Smash Brothers game. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that could be.
Come on, man. Abandoning the IP. Every new console is going to have a new Smash. Just like it's going to have a new Mario Kart and a new Mario.
You don't think they just get... No. So you don't think they do what a Mario Kart 8 and just port it to the Switch 2?
Why wouldn't they sell you a base game for full price that everyone's going to buy and then milk you for all those DLC? It's just money. It's just money. They're definitely going to make it.
Oh, that's money I'd pay as well.
Yeah, of course. That's why they do it.
Do they... Because Nintendo care a lot about their reputation. Do they milk that cash cow even knowing that the next installment of the game could end up being like an inferior one? Or like without Sakurai at the helm, like Sakurai seems pretty convinced that no one else can do it.
If they plan on sunsetting Smash Bros. Or like doing their swan song with the franchise, it's going to be a live service so they can continue releasing characters.
I think the most logical thing for a Smash Brothers would be Sakurai maybe supervising. I don't think this is the game that he's working on. I think it's probably a Kid Icarus or maybe a brand new IP for because if it started production 2 years ago, it's probably going to be ready in time for Ounce, you know, Switch 2. I'd say it could be a launch thing maybe for that. But I see Smash Brothers Ultimate being...
Sakurai always lie to us about like what characters yeah, but, that, but like, that, I'm pretty sure
that's a different Smash Bros. I think that's a different, because I think he's trying to get people off the trail of, I don't think he's coming to Smash Bros. I think we'll get an Ultimate port for the Switch 2, and I think with that you'll probably get another character pack of like 4 or 5 characters announced over a couple of weeks at best, I think is what you get. I don't think we're getting another Smash Brothers game, at least this isn't it. I don't think what he's working on right now.
That could be actually a way to... That is probably how they actually put Smash Brothers to bed. It's just another character pack that no one was
expecting
like years after the fact. They're like, look, this were really...
And like, throw on all the ones that the fans wanted. Give people... Master Chief. Yeah, Master Chief or... who's the guy at the... Who everyone thought was the last character? Was it Bloodborne? Who's the... At the campfire? When Sora was announced, everyone thought it was someone else.
Dark Souls
character, yeah. Throw them in. Throw Waluigi in. Just give the people what they want for the last character
for
pack.
For the love of God, give us Waluigi.
Don't give us Dark Souls. It just... Ugh.
People were so into that theory.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I can't look at a bonfire without thinking Dark Souls, so that's why. But I didn't want that to happen. I didn't expect that to ever happen. It's not a good mesh. Same with Doom Guy. I love Doom Guy.
Yeah. Well, Doom Guy's Master Chief. I was like,
Doom Guy was a clever. Yeah, I think if Doom Guy's in it, you don't get Master Chief. But Doom Guy was a clever introduction to it in terms of a Mii costume. You know, simple kind of thing like that. Did we get the Grinch? Remember that leak?
No, I don't remember that leak.
There was a big leak towards the last two character announcements, and because the Grinch was in some sort of the Grinch of Christmas game, or I can't remember how it was thing, but everyone thought that the Grinch was legitimately. Loads of the content creators who were reviewing Smash Brothers used to wear Grinch t-shirts every time there was a character announcement.
Grinch maybe in like multiverses. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
He wouldn't fit in there. He wouldn't fit in Smash.
Yeah, I wouldn't want him in Smash. He's not a video game character. I don't want him there. Okay, so Chris, is it Smash Brothers, yes or no?
Yes.
Luke, is it Smash Brothers, yes or no?
No.
And I will also say no. Watch this space. For our next article, we're going to go to gamesindustry.biz with Sophie McAvoy to talk about Call of Duty Black Ops on Games Pass. So Call of Duty Black Ops 6 breaks records for Game Pass subscriptions. The release of Call of Duty Black Ops 6 set new records for Xbox and was the biggest launch of the franchise in its history. During Microsoft's earnings call for its first quarter of 2025, CEO Satya Nadella revealed that the game broke records for day one players and Game Pass subscribers. Black Ops 6 is the first Activision Blizzard title to launch day and date on Game Pass. The title also saw unit sales on PlayStation and Steam increase by 60% year over year. Quote, this speaks to our strategy of meeting gamers where they are by enabling them to play more games across the screens they spend their time on, said Nadella. Chief Financial Officer Amy Hood noted that the difference with this launch compared to previous entries in the franchise was the game being available on Game Pass and it requiring an online connection. Quote, for players who play through Game Pass, subscription revenue is recognized over time, said Hood. The game requires an online connection to play, so even for players who purchase a standalone game, revenue recognition will also occur ratably over time. Ratably? That could be a spell check on. Sorry about that one, guys. Microsoft has reported a strong Q1 with its Xbox content and services revenue up 61% year on year. The firm acquired Activision Blizzard in October 2023 following regulatory hurdles in the UK, EU, and US. As part of the deal, Ubisoft obtained cloud streaming rights for Call of Duty and other Activision Blizzard titles over the next 15 years. Microsoft has also made binding agreements with Sony and Nintendo to keep Call of Duty on its platforms for the next 10 years. Analysts predicted that Black Ops 6 could boost Game Pass subscribers by 2.5 million to 4 million. They also suggested the launch of the title into Game Pass may hurt sales of the game. We discussed the potential for Black Ops 6 to drive Game Pass subscription in our latest episode of the GameIndustry.biz microcast. Sorry, that was just a little bit for GameIndustry.biz. As we expected?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
My question on this, though, which I find is weird. So they have the Activision Blizzard titles for the next 15 years. They have said that it's going to be available on other platforms for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they making this money back from? Like I understand that revenue is great. It's up 61% year on year or whatever else, but they spent billions on this Activision thingy and they're only going to get the exclusivity for Call of Duty, for example, for 5 years, a decade from now.
Yeah, that's really funny. A decade from now, they get some exclusivity rights for a bit. I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I don't know what the business model is here. I don't know what they're... I guess, like, the first place that my thoughts go is that people buy Xbox Game Pass to play Call of Duty Black Ops, or they get in the door, and then they go, ooh, look at all these other games I can get. I can't finish Black Ops in a month. Casual gamers.
Or they forget that.
Yeah. Such like.
Well, they're not. I mean, there's.
They're not going to beat them one night.
you get them in the door and you get them hooked on the online multiplayer, because guaranteed the campaign is just going to be like, what, the fucking 6 hours and just not worth the price, because it never is. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is you got the people that just forget about subscriptions and they'll just say stay subscribed for ages.
Yeah, which is the whole subscription model.
Still making money off of the sales on other platforms.
True that, yeah. If they didn't have it on PlayStation or Nintendo. Does Call of Duty come out for Nintendo?
There's no way it's on Nintendo.
No, there's no way. Yeah. So for like Steam or PlayStation, that's where they're making the money back, I suppose. Because if they didn't have it on that and they just put it on Games Pass, there's no... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess the lack of exclusivity benefits them. That's a point I think you made, Chris, a while ago, that they want it on as many platforms.
I mean, the cut from those platforms is about 30%, but that's still... Like, a majority of those people aren't going to buy an Xbox just to play this game, so they still have to be able to sell it to them. So this will make their money back, I think.
Yeah. I think. That makes it is a lot of money to make back. But
so much money to make back. There you go.
But it doesn't end there. Like, the Diablos 2, they've also announced remastering StarCraft and shit, which I can't believe StarCraft on consoles. No, thank you. But, yeah. I mean, the Blizzard Activision IP sell, so they will make the money back, I think.
Over time. They got 10 years worth of selling on everybody's platform to make the money back. We'll wait and see. I'm happy that it has broken all the records for them, because that's what they needed to do. It would have been awful if it just was like, no, nobody's getting this in Games Pass. But like, yikes. There goes the model. So that's good for them. Our last news item for today is the Monster Hunter Wilds beta. This is coming from Lincoln Carpenter over at PC Gamer. The Monster Hunter Wilds beta isn't looking so hot, but Capcom says the full game is already in a more improved state. So the article reads as follows. As a card carrying Monster Hunter sicko, it brings me no joy to say this. The Monster Hunter Wilds beta does not bode well for a smooth launch. Considering it's attracting hundreds of thousands of players, the beta is certainly enjoying plenty of attention. Unfortunately, that attention hasn't been entirely positive. Players aren't having the peachiest time once they've entered the Forbidden Lands for their demo hunts. Hunters have been reporting widespread performance struggles, while seemingly bugged LOD, level of detail, transitions are leaving their games populated with ghastly low-poly NPCs and monster models that look straight out of a PS1 game. Currently, the front page of Monster Hunter subreddits is filled with players sharing the bizarre scenes produced by the beta's graphics issue. In one video of the introductory demo hunt, the giant toad monster Chitacabra appears as an amorphous hulk with no identifiable features and missing limbs. In another, an LOD crunched Ray Dow swoops in looking like a cliff racer from Morrowind. Elsewhere on Reddit, in a thread discussing the beta's player
count... This is making me want, like, some sort of Lovecraftian Monster Hunter. Just, like, where you're hunting, like, Eldritch Horrors. That'd be so dope.
It would be pretty cool, actually. A real dark one. Elsewhere on Reddit, in a thread discussing the beta's player count, discussion quickly shifted as users across the spectrum of PCs shared their experiences with the beta's spotty performance. Quote, I'm on a Ryzen 5600 RTX 3060. Decent mid-range stuff, and I barely hit 30 frames per second a lot of the time without DLSS on medium settings. That was pure
gobbledygook
for me.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Yeah. As long as it makes sense. With it, the Redditor said, I can hit 50 to 60, but the world seems to be smeared in Vaseline. It's not a great trade-off. Another one said, there definitely seems to be a CPU bottleneck or something when it comes to the frame rate in town. So another user running an AMD Ryzen 5800X and an NVIDIA RTX 3080. Quote, because I found changing graphics settings made very little difference. I only gained like 10 frames per second going from high or higher ultra to low. I'm assuming, is that a high-grade PC that person just described, Chris?
Well, actually, not super high. I would say that's a mid-range still, a little over mid-range, but still, you should be able to...
Play games?
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I haven't experienced any monsters devolving into polygonal Frankensteins. I've been enduring my own performance issues with the Wilds beta. In addition to low frame rates and frequent LOD pop-in, the game's got a current constant blurry ghosting effect, even when I've disabled any kind of upscaling. I can tinker with things until it's playable enough to hunt a monster, but I wouldn't call it an enjoyable level of performance. Much as I'd like to say otherwise, this doesn't come as a complete surprise. After Dragon Dogma 2 generated a share performance woes earlier this year, Capcom didn't inspire confidence when it revealed that the recommended Monster Hunter Wild system specs were only targeting 1080p 60 frames per second with medium settings and frame generation enabled. Dragon Dogma 2 notably got a patch in September, 6 months after release, to improve frame rates in areas with a lot of NPCs, such as towns and centers, which were apparently suffering due to CPU overload. Both games run on Capcom's internal RE engine. Now, what I can say is, as a guy who played through the beta, on my PlayStation. So I wasn't on PC. It was on console, whatever else. I had none of those Frankenstein issues. Frame rate issues, yes. The place looks like it's smeared in Vaseline sometimes, yes. But none of the horrible stuff. And you should look at the pictures. The pictures of what the monsters people were fighting are hilarious looking in terms of the low poly things. But as the beta goes, I mean, they have said it's potentially running on an old code. Because it's the beta of like essentially the opening. You play the opening section of the game plus one quest, maybe an hour or two into gameplay, maybe, is where they've kind of based this beta off. And for the most part, I had an absolute blast.
Good.
Playing it.
That's great.
I'm not a PC player, though, so it looks like PC players are going to have an absolute hard time, it sounds like. This looks like a port job that's not going to go well.
They've released an older, apparent, what they thought was a more stable version of it for beta, and... Yeah, they're reaping the benefits of beta and finding out all the stuff that they missed that was wrong with it all along.
Yeah, but the beta testing is supposedly for server, like in terms of online play and stuff like that, supposedly.
Okay. I don't think stress testing.
Stress testing.
Always why they do the betas.
Yeah. But for Luke, I know it's been a while since you played Monster Hunter game, but Chris, it's going to be great.
I'm not getting a Monster Hunter on release. I've only played the two, right?
Rise and World?
Yeah. And they were both shit on release. There's barely any content. Like, World was horrible release. So short. Wasn't good until Iceborne.
I have to do so much lip biting here.
you disagree wholeheartedly?
I do disagree wholeheartedly. I understand where Chris is coming from in terms of the length of game. Like, Iceborne added a whole lot of kind of like single player go through stuff to do. I get that. Monster Hunter World, it took me a long time, and I was playing through it with like Craig and Andy and Colm, and we went through tons of that game. Took us ages to get through all the way to the, like, we went on, we beat the Fatalis at the end of Monster Hunter World, so we finished the game.
He wasn't in base.
No. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of to get to Iceborne, took us a long time.
Base World was like, you killed Nergigante and the credits roll. That was it.
No, the credits.
I think it was Nerd.
Yes, no. The credits roll in terms of, I understand that from like the, hey, you get to the monsters causing all of the other ones to go crazy. I get that, but the amount of quests that opened thereafter was huge. Like all
okay,
other-
so I have no bearing on like what actually opened up after there. All I know is I saw base game credits because I only played once Iceborne was out. But I remember seeing the credits rolls. Like if that was the game, that is bad.
So from I mean, start to finish doing the story mode, but I mean, Monster Hunter's never been a story mode game. Like, you got to that and it opened up, like, you know, now you've got the hunter ranks and you're going to do certain quests when your hunter ranking is up, so you got to go through all that. So that became, like, that's the thing I love about Monster Hunter games, that we did that, and then for me, the grind began. And I don't mean the grind in the bad sense, I mean the grind is in the very positive Monster Hunter grind that I love so much, kind of truly began after that point.
Oh, okay.
So I get what you mean, in terms of, like, the single player narrative section, short, but it's always like, if it even has a single player narrative section in a Monster Hunter game, it's always going to be short. But what the kind of there was going to be great. But I get what you're saying in terms of this one probably going to need a bit of time to maybe get an update based on their performance issues after launch date. But it had all of the, I was playing through, it has this great new thing where you're on you have a mount, like, it's, they've taken a few bits and pieces from Rise. It's very much a Monster Hunter World game with a few little tidbits from Rise, but you've got this mount called the Secret with you, and when you get knocked over, you can call for it when you're like lying face down on the ground, and it comes in and it scoops you up over its neck onto its back and runs off with you out of danger. There's the Ray Dao is like the big bad monster of the wilds. It's not part of the beta to hunt him, but you can choose to. He's just incredibly tough. I beat him with Andrew last night. It's the coolest thing ever. He's like electric kind of dragon thing, but he's almost got like a railgun. Like, his mouth closes into the shape of almost like a railgun and shoots at this like massive explosion lightning thing. Really, really cool. But I was playing it last night. The music's classically Monster Hunter amazing, like really dramatic and all that kind of stuff. And I got wrecked, got blasted by this guy and got rolled off into the mud. And it's like a lightning storm happening and it's all whatever else. And don't get me wrong, graphically, there's some issues here still for sure. But I called my secret as this thing was charging this blast at me. He scooped me up as the like music crescendoed and I dive bombed out of the way of this like rail gun, and I was sitting there being like, oh, it's a Monster Hunter game in all of the best ways, like, you know. So I'm very excited. The beta has a lot of issues, and I think people are really, really worried about what it's capable of for PCs. I think the console is going to be safe. I think people playing it on PlayStation 5 Pro are going to have a better time with it as well, judging on what they've come out and said since, that at least the Pro might be able to hit 60 frames per second. The base model probably not. So yeah, I'm excited for it. I understand the issues that they have with it, but it's 80 days. They've got a couple more months to fine-tune it.
Yeah. I think it's exciting. It's exciting for them to put their foot forward on a new Monster Hunter venture.
And it's an insane investment by Capcom. Like, playing through the opening cutscene and stuff like that, I'm like, there's a lot of money gone into this game. Like, you know, by Capcom standards, this is probably their biggest budget thing. Yeah. I'd say they've probably ever
half-arsing it. Like, they're...
Nope.
They're going whole hog.
Graphically, they might be, you know, performance wise on PC, they might be half-arsing.
They're figuring out some things.
Yeah, that's, exactly.
That's okay.
It's gonna be a crazy month though, because Civ 7 comes out.
Oh, stop. Year. Civ 7 comes out the start of that month, and so I'll get like 3 weeks of hardcore Civ 7 time before Monster Hunter.
Actually, Civ 7 is actually another one I'm not buying on release, because I think it's going to take years to get the content that'll make it better than Civ 6. Civ 6, they've been continuously maintaining, and it's just...
They brought out, that was the wild thing about Civ 6, it was a couple of months ago now.
Like, oh, they're still updating it. It's fine.
They brought out an old school leader pack for free of charge, like, 4 months ago, and I was like, what is, like, I'm surely Civ 7's on the horizon, what are they doing here? So yeah, it's a cracking game still, Civ 6, but
I wonder if they did that because they had to go back and go through Civ 6 to get like dialogue for those leaders to put into Civ 7, and they were just like, while we're in here, let's just make these
just
guys
throw them in.
Yeah,
I love that idea.
When's the release date for Monster Hunter?
February 28th.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Very end of thingy. So pre-orders are already out and everything like that. The great thing about playing in the beta and having a save data on the beta means that I'm going to get a plushie that I can hang off my secret when I start playing the real Monster Hunter. And when you're playing
I like that shit.
It's just a fun thing, because it's like, I didn't pay for anything. The beta's free. It's like, here's a fun thing you can either attach onto your weapon or your sacred pouch. And I'm like, I'm putting that on my sacred pouch.
I also like it as an idea. A plushie though, could they not like give you like a cool sword or something
No, see, the plushie thing,
a sword would give other players too much FOMO, I guess.
Yeah, good. be better next time.
You want to play the beta? You want to get this sword? Yeah, I like that idea.
I love that stuff.
Well, that's all the news I have for you guys this episode. Is there anything you guys want to pitch? You guys sell anything?
Yeah, check out my Patreon, the Gift of Gaming Podcast, patreon.com/ The Gift of Gaming Podcast.
Nice, Luke. Thank you for that.
Go give me some money. specifically me.
We're going to go on to a post show where we're going to talk about Fnatic is the game developers, the guys who did the Days Before, that whole rigmarole. There's a big article about their new game and stuff like that. We're going to discuss that in the post show. You can check that out, as Luke said, on the Gift of Gaming Podcast. Patreon at patreon.com/giftofgaming. I did that the wrong way around, but there you go. We're there now. And then if you want loads more content, we'll be doing more battle royales and little fun mashups with video game characters. You can check out all out there. Chris, thank you very much for popping on the show. Pleasure. Luke, thank you very much for popping on the show. Pleasure. And to our listeners, as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.